Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, another global and timeless fireside chat, but this crazy moment in time we're at right now of the days are long and the years can be short sometime, but here we are in person in the new studio. I've been going out and about, and I want to start off by telling a little story of a couple years ago of these moments in time. And I'm sitting here in person looking at Andrew Seeley, who I vividly remember. It was like we didn't know this thing that was coming called COVID. And we had this event, big shout out to Audrey Grubesic of her whole amazing platform of Offsite Dirt. And she was building that out, and she was using our Experience Center here in Denver to host an event that was the story that became part of show 257 titled Building a System-Built Factory in the Colorado Mountains. And the presentation was Charlie Chupp. If you haven't listened to that podcast, go check it out, because he definitely came in with the future of construction and not just talking about it. It was like, here's the concept. And it wasn't a few months ago, Charlie was sitting right at this new podcast studio talking about how they built this factory. And so there was a bunch of us in the audience that were like, okay, we've been at this for a while. We got to figure out, like, okay, what can we learn from Charlie? How can we work from Charlie? Audrey, this master facilitator, bringing all these people in. And there was this guy that I had like never heard of, never met. And he's like, yeah, I just flew in and I just really wanted to check this out. And I was like, wow, good on him for like flying in for this event that I had a hard time getting the people that were right here to come to it. And it's, you know, and we all have to try to figure this stuff out. But Andrew, I don't know if you remember, welcome to the studio when you walked in and you were like, wow, you guys got a lot going on here, right? And we've continued to push the needle. And I'm so excited to welcome you to the Art of Construction to share your story that before we turned the mic on, we were talking about how, you know, it's like we're like these social media friends and we're all passionate about the same stuff, but it's like, okay, Andrew, what's your story? And so that's what we get to do today, is like really get into Andrew's story. So what the main message I want to convey today is that, you know, we want to contribute to the development of building creation and the delivery of the future. And as we are teeing this thing up, the delivery of the future, I think, is the key thing. As I was watching the videos on your website and the G-Pod of like, how do the logistics work of this thing, of this kit of parts, is that, I think, is a lot of the conversation. You know, shout out to Dave Cooper, that you and I are on his platform listening and learning from all these people all over the globe, and we're pulling all these resources together. And that's really what's going to benefit you, Tribe, is that, you know, we don't have enough time to do it all ourselves, right? So this Art of Construction platform is for that. And what it's going to do is we're all about today to illuminating these dusty corners of stagnation. And boy, we're living it right now, right? And so our industry, we want to help to create this wider discussion to support adoption of new ideas. And I love the adoption of new ideas. And that's what I want to unpack today, because you guys are definitely doing that. But these new ideas, they have to turn into proper solutions and the right materials. And Andrew, you didn't just say it like Charlie. You did it. Because you're like, yeah, I live in the G-Pod. And we're like, what? And you, Tribe, you got to go to his website and what he's doing. Like, it's super cool. And I'm honored to have you here, Andrew, as a lifelong learner and being one of our master facilitators from the Art of Construction. Like, you are one of those people that's going all over the place and grabbing this kindling and throwing it in the fire, right? And you live this forward-thinking projects, and we're super excited to take your story and hear it. So without further ado, Andrew, are you ready to do the speed round and get to know you and your story?
I'm ready, Devin.
All right. So what's your favorite beverage?
Water, officially, but, you know, if we're talking about for fun and social purposes, it's tequila.
All right. What? Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
You know, Asia was probably the most different place that I've ever been. I think it's the most different region on our planet. You know, if you're coming from the U.S., things are harder to recognize over there. The first trip to China was a six-week trip where I saw, it was in 1999, I saw some things that I feel like were pretty significant as a travel exposure. And so that would probably be the big one. And it's, China's not the same anymore, but it was pretty interesting back then. And I think it gave me a lot of context for Asia, understanding Asia a little bit as best we can. And it was a cool place. Good food, great people.
I'm dying to hear like one story when you say that context.
Oh, man. Bus ride into Tibet. Sand roads. The roads are all like the soil as you go west in Sichuan province towards Tibet. That side of the Himalayas or Himalayas is pretty sandy. So the roads are cut into the mountainside. On a bus, pretty crowded bus, in the dark, in raining conditions. The bus stops. I don't speak Chinese, so I didn't really know why. When the light dawned in the morning, I could see it was about 300-500 feet above a river, and there had been a landslide. So we were stopped. We were in a convoy. There was a landslide ahead of us. And so we were there probably 12 hours before they cleared. What had happened was we had a landslide. All these vehicles were stopped on the road. The villagers that lived down in the valley walked up to the site where the vehicles were all stopped, and they cleared by hand until some equipment arrived. And they also, the men were digging, the women brought food, and they cooked food, and they sold it for a regular price. It wasn't like gouging. They had a captive audience or captive market, but they just prepared food and sold it to us because we didn't have the means to eat. And wow. It was a cool experience to see that happen.
Well, and that's what we're going to talk about today, is overcoming obstacles, yeah. Right? And figuring that out. What do you like to do when you're not working on breaking down these silos that we passionately call the art of construction?
I think the thing that I do most visibly is probably attend some motorcycle road racing events. And I'm part of a group that supports veterans through events that are fundraising, giving events. And that's centered around a sport called MotoGP, which is like Formula One for motorcycles. But I spend a lot of time in Ireland going to a road racing series over there. And the Irish have road races where there isn't a circuit. You're using public roads that they close, and they race on that. And it's men and women, old and young, people that are well-funded, people that aren't. And it's a pretty cool community. And so once you've been exposed to that, you feel like, You kind of want to support the people that are given of themselves to do this personally. It's just an achievement for them, but it's a beautiful thing to partake of. And, you know, it's hard because the dark side of it is people perish doing this. And so, you know, you've got to accept that it's part of reality. We're alive, and then, you know, maybe we're not, but it's an interesting community, and I spend a lot of time visiting them over there. I'm a diver. I was a scuba diver early on in my life, and a dive master, and I'm into free diving. So that's something that I spend a lot of time on Instagram looking at the posts, but I don't do it because I live in Texas and I'm busy.
So. Awesome. Well, pleasure to have you here, Andrew. What is your story that led you to become the president of G-Pod Americas?
Thanks so much, Devin. It's great to be here. I love what you guys do. I was amazed to come here that first event you mentioned. Connected because of Audrey, and to see Charlie talk about what they were doing, and mind-blowing to me. And the community here is significant. And yes, we're all global, but at the same time, the local communities are important to help build out what we're all trying to do together. I was G-Pod Global's first U.S. customer, and that turned into a relationship that they saw an opportunity to have somebody with my background help them go to market in the U.S., and that's how it all started. So I was their first customer. They incentivized me to do a little bit more, and it was a fun but slippery slope. And eventually, their go-to-market strategy needed a little bit of a reboot. So we decided to let the scope creep happen a little bit and take the longer road to do a little bit more. They had always had their eye on a global market, and We always wanted to be a global solution provider from the design side. And so I bought a couple of their products, and I was I had my own idea about what I was doing, and had that land north of San Antonio. I was living in Austin at the time, and So I put one of the pods there, and then I was going to go to the Caribbean where I used to live and put one of their pods there.
Gotcha.
And all that sort of changed because of COVID and all the other things that happened along the way. So we decided to roll out some other ideas, and you know, I've used the example before of we recorded a song and released it, and it did well, but then we got to build the record out, the album out, right? And then release that. So we're working on those things now and trying to get some of the conceptual details put in place, and then have a more clear offering to the market that's in turmoil. There's so much going on, you know. Yeah. What reference point do we have that is static? Everything is dynamic right now. So.
Well said. Well, I guess I want to go all the way. Like, so you said you were probably their first customer in the U.S., if I'm understanding that right.
That's correct. It was.
How did you find them and like the origin story of G-Pod of like, and sign up to say, I'm going to order this thing that no one else has ordered.
Yeah.
And we'll put links in the show notes of like, there's a video that you did of like your open house to see this. Like opening the house is a little box that is amazing. All the people in the environment that you've created, which comes with complications that we're going to talk about too, right?
Yep. So it's an interesting story. I had an architect friend, still a friend of mine, and she was doing a container project, and having lived on islands, I was pretty familiar with containerized logistics. And I thought to myself, what I need is a solution that can move in the container logistics world, right? In a marine setting, like barges and trucks and cranes and things like that. And I wanted to build something that I could ship to the Caribbean and move around, because I don't always want to be in the same place. Something that was relocatable. And we got to talking about it, and probably 4 or 5 days later, she sent me a link and she said, you know, we could do something, but why don't you just get one of these? And I thought, oh man. So I reached out to him, and that was, I thought, well, yeah, there's no way that I can do that. I understood enough mechanically to say, there's no way I'm building that for any kind of budget that makes sense. So that's what I did.
Yeah, and I want to stop there to say, this is the part of this group of master facilitators in the art of construction to say, we can't all reinvent the wheel ourselves. We have to be able to niche in, like you talked about how dynamic all this stuff is, to figure out as you're on this road trip now to make these stops along the way, to where we had Johnny Rezvani with 475 on the podcast, and we had a lot of fun with titling, and I said, you know what, we gotta not sell passive house to sell passive house and spin this stuff, and it's all like the words matter, and you're going to end up in Canada. There's so many experts that have niched in and doing this work. That's one thing I just want to stop and say. That's what the art of construction and these different master facilitators to say, you know, I think about like Mark with and Dave Cooper and these guys that are kind of stepping up and working on the business to the who's in the business doing the right stuff. And if I understand it right, you're saying, okay, I want something that's relocatable. You went to a local person you know, but the local person said, hey, you should look here, because that's what they're working on. Am I understanding that right?
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's really important, right? So I guess, so you went to buy one. Where's G-Pod started, and like, how did they get going to be this moving pod system?
So Dan Sparks is a pretty well-known architect, Sunshine Coast, north of Brisbane, Australia, and Queensland is the state. And he had this idea, I don't know, probably 2012 or something like that. G stands for global.
Okay.
And he had this idea. He's a pretty cool guy. I think of him like a Paul McCartney design, you know. He has a deep well of creativity, and his ideas are appealing. Good. He's got good design sense. It's the maybe Scandinavian simplicity or feel, but a little warmer and a little more tropical capability. You know, Northern Europe is rigid and cool in a lot of the feel, but he brings a little bit of the warmth of Australia. And he traveled a lot, and he had an idea, and he built it out on his own. So it's a side project for him in a sense. And then he has a team in in Hong Kong who was going to market with it. And they had, you know, they had, that was a, it's probably the first example I was aware of an architect creating a global product. So interesting. I don't think productization was a hidden concept then. It was clear that there was an opportunity probably for the last 50 years. You know, I'm sure the idea came along to different architects, but right. somebody that had the ability had traveled a lot and understood that there was an opportunity to modernize our approach by productizing something that was logistically simple. Now, from a building science standpoint, metal is challenging, right? So there are still opportunities to do a lot, but it was a good place to start. And he made a really good design.
Which is so important to begin with the end in mind on whatever that specific project and where you niche in is, you have to have these master facilitators that are kind of architecturally trained and have lived it, but they have to be thinking more than just drawing a pretty picture when it comes to productization, kit of parts, all these terms that you and I go around and are fascinated by, right? And Matt McMullen is our executive director, and he's the one leading the execution, but really trying to build that kit of parts that is scalable. Because you have to scale it to actually move this stuff along. And so this is kind of the deep conversation of, I want to get into this of like, Andrew, what is GPOD trying to solve? And then we'll understand what you're offering out of really what is what we're going to solve. And we have a bunch of bullet points here that I tasked you with to kind of fill in the blanks to talk through that. Because you've been to a lot of different areas of concern, starting off by just buying one of these, because it's just a lot harder than I think everybody thinks it's going to be when they jump into it, when you put the shoe on.
Yeah, isn't everything?
Yeah.
I mean.
But I do want to stop before I pass the baton to you. I think about orchestrating a network. You talked about how we built a song and now we're trying to build the whole album. And I think about music of right now, we were part of Digital Build Week in Anaheim, and we did a bunch of podcasts there. And I've become good friends with, his name's Moritz Luck, who he founded the company called Enscape, and he's just recently sold it. And I was doing a panel with them, and I always, as a lifelong learner, and why I wanted to have you on the podcast, I'm always like, what is this next silver bullet? Knowing there is no silver bullet, right? But it was the book. I said, I'm always like, what book and what learning should we do? And Moritz like, oh, Build by Tony Fadell, and his story is so awesome about how he created the iPod to then remove the iPod to be able to be the iPhone to then leave that and starting Nest. And the book is so well done, how he weaves through these different orchestrating these network of what are you trying to solve here and the customer part. And I think when you get down to that, we can't say that enough on the Art of Construction, because you set out to solve this by buying a unit, by taking kind of a chance, because it wasn't like these were everywhere in Austin or San Antonio, sorry, right?
No, it was yeah. Austin. Yeah,
it was Austin. So it wasn't like there was just a bunch of GPODs to go check out.
That's right.
You had to take a risk to say, right, I'm going to try this to figure it out. So that is where I think it's really cool, where you're wearing the shoes, where I've been at events where you've given tours and stuff of your place. But like, what is the big GPOD? What are you guys trying to solve with this platform of these movable units?
I think the conversation has to start with a global approach. So GPOD Global originally went to market with a centralized manufacturing facility in China and had a great deal of capacity there, but where's the market and how do we deliver and scale? Can deliver affordability, so you can manage pricing a little bit with scale, but how do we do that? Well, in the end, I think in the current times, the approach that we would have is a bit of a reset to that. So we would say, let's scale the design globally, but execute regionally and locally with different materials for different markets. Because as you know, in even your market, which is significant, I mean, if you're out west or out east in Colorado, it's different conditions. And if you're in the mountains, it's different 100%. Conditions. So you've got that same scenario in your market. I think we have to have that ability to create a recognizable design and then allow the local markets to deliver that, so that we're keeping some visual continuity, so people know generally that it's something or that it's recognizably somebody's, and then have a design basis for adoption by the local talent and using the local materials. So generally we're trying to scale something recognizable, but with globally unique materials and approaches to deliver that.
And that's what the car industry has done, right? And that's what we have to learn from that. And we talk a lot about that, of the different analogies of, back to my thing about the build book of the iPod, to go, their whole thing was, what's the problem? Is you had to have your CD stack around all over with your expensive Case Logic case that they'd scratch and all the stuff you had to do to, like, that's what the iPod solved, which was mind-blowing, right? And now we're in construction. We're in this, you said at the beginning of this, you said in China there's capacity, but all markets are local of municipalities, and it boils down to decision makers. And as soon as you think you have it figured out, something hits in, like inflation. Yeah. And now the news changes of, now it's not how fast you can get it. Maybe it will change to say you actually have to build it better or be more efficient or whatever the reason is. And so construction is so messy because of the volatility of the things that are external of what we're actually trying to achieve when it comes to product, the products in the local market. So it's fascinating for me to hear, like, the longer you cast the net, the smaller the world is, but how do the logistics come together, if I'm hearing you right?
You need more nets.
Yeah.
Cast by more people. I think the automobile comparison is interesting because, in my opinion, a car is more of a commodity. We can select a car off the menu that suits our needs or our personality. It's a little bit harder with a car, a building, because a car is generally working with two dimensions of reality. It's got to do some safety things. It's got to do some efficiency things. It's got to cost something. But generally, I think it's an easier equation to solve for globally from one platform. You see that all the car manufacturers are onto platforms. They've figured out the modularity of their designs and how does BMW deliver a car that says BMW or says Mini, and it's essentially the same thing, right?
But
it's got the same qualities, but they're radically different than something else that they make. So there's a limit, but in buildings, I think we've got the climate differences. We've got the local supply chain differences, the local materials, the local tastes. And then 100%. There are the individuals of the people, the individual characters of the people who are using it and living in it or whatever.
Right. So, and the global partners, construction is just different than other things where you just, well, we're just going to ship it all on train and it's going to this mass produce of these rolls of steel and then this, and it's all going to come together until you go do it. And you're like, well, it didn't work like that. Whatever that other thing, because I 100% agree, is like, it all boils down to the local talent has to execute whatever however you're going to blend on-site and off-site construction, however you're passing the baton has to be passed.
And that's a concrete reality. I don't think that'll ever change. So I think that we know now, globalization gave us a lot of insight into how everything works and what is out there. But we still need a really strong local basis for our delivery methods. And what is it doing locally, right? In the end, the local side of planning approval and development has to be locally clever. You have to do it in a way that makes sense for the people there, whether they're approving it or whether they're assembling it or any of the development really has to be very, very local.
And like local here in Colorado is trying to change something like the weather patterns and the fires to then be able to, how do you insurance and devastation and all these things of how do you react to then go make some, to build better buildings? It's so much harder to put those pieces together than you think, especially if you're trying to do it in a scale. So like, talk more about how the adoption has worked for you guys as you've now spent a few years living in this, going around telling the story, showcasing how, talk about the size of your G-Pod and like paint the picture for those who may not know where you live and what it is.
So that part of the story opens up when we had taken the decision to try to create a platform rather than shipping 100% complete relocatable units, which were done at the smallest form factor we could do, which was the dimensions. These weren't retrofit containers. These were fabricated, very unique buildings, structural steel, and they were containerized, but they were never containers. So we went from that approach to saying, what about a development platform that gives us some continuity in purpose, but lets the local development need and desire and opportunity work with what we're doing? So we wanted that platform to be something that would democratize development. So originally the idea was like, well, why do you have to be an experienced developer to do the execution? Why can't we buy an off-the-shelf design that's interesting and that gets attention and is charming somehow to people, appealing visually, and come up with a way to offer that as a solution to folks who maybe they've done maybe they've done some rehabs, or maybe they're renting property, they've got 10 or 12 buildings, but they always have to do a massive retrofit. What if they have an opportunity to build something new and they're not developers in the sense that they've already done 15 huge residential developments or something like that? So we wanted to have the democratization opportunity there where we simplify the process for people. We give them something that's interesting to work with. It's unique. However, it's easier. Easier meaning there are less moving parts and less decision, fewer decisions to make. So we conceptualized the Nexus, and Dan decided to put the radius corners in there as a challenge, which was an interesting moment in time, because I had to say, well, okay, I guess we'll do that, you know, and I wasn't really ready for that at the moment. So I think the radius corners were a good idea, because it gives you a recognizable, you know, you can do two things. You can do a 90 degree, or you can have a curved assembly that gives you that transition from vertical to horizontal or whatever. So we visualize the idea, but essentially it gives us a chance to have ultimately a volumetric modular solution, but it doesn't have to be that way. So we're going to market now as essentially what looks like a custom home design and delivery crew. So we don't do the production, we don't do the construction, but we would do the design and then facilitate planning approval, support the project management, and then come in and do the commissioning. So we can deliver something that we predicted that we'd be able to deliver and confirm that that's actually the case. So measurement's a big part of that. So this platform lets us do those things in all of the markets where we already have had success getting attention and finding latent demand. So the original plan was to do a two-story, what we call a two-story house, which would be, if it were a volumetric solution, it would be like 10 modules. And it'd be two stories, and it would look like the stuff on the website, flat roof stacked. I was going to do that in Austin. Then, having already done a little bit of work to the offsite property that we have in San Antonio, COVID came along, and I thought, well, you know, I better zig or zag or whatever. And so we just abandoned the plan to do a project in Austin at that point, and scaled down a little bit to the villa size, which is a single story, whatever dimension that you need. So that building is 1,200 square feet indoors, and it's 60 feet long and 24 feet wide, 13 feet tall on one side and 11 feet tall on the other side. It's a shed roof. And because we didn't have any utility support out there, there's no utilities for water or electricity or cable or anything like that, we said, okay, well, now we can showcase some of the things we had in mind to do an off-grid, a whole off-grid project where the construction is actually enabled by the infrastructure, the energy infrastructure and water infrastructure that we put in ahead of time. So that's what got us where we are now. And that's an interesting project because it's a prototype. So I'm the customer, you know, we're eating our own cooking.
So you have two, you're a customer of two different projects.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then, you know, I wasn't involved in the design and execution of the dwells, which are the containerized solutions that I live in. But
that's what you bought and lived
correct.
In. You have
that's
one.
Correct. I'm living in that to this day.
Okay.
You know, one of those, one of them's an office. The other one's a place to sleep.
Gotcha.
So we decided to do the villa, which is the Nexus model that we're building there. And that was just designed to be our proof of concept to be able to show customers and builders and everybody in the industry, anybody who's interested, what it is up close and in person, and give us a chance to test out in a safe environment, in a relative vacuum, what do we want to try to do? How do we want to try to solve these problems with an eye on global, but of course it's very local. And the only way to do that, the thing that led us to the kit of parts right away, was that I couldn't execute with a volumetric solution in Texas without having all the regulatory work done. And that's just incredibly expensive and slow and complicated. So easier for us to treat it as a custom home because there's really no regulatory friction there. And we can do whatever we want to without having to, obviously we don't get the same result as a full volumetric solution, but as we go along,
because you have to do more on site.
Yeah. Everything's on site. Yeah. So we're doing a retrograde approach, but it's an approach that we can take anywhere in any market, so that the site-built solution is available today everywhere on the planet. There's nowhere that doesn't allow us to do that, as far as I know. And we can bring the hybrid where we're bringing in panels. You know, we're working with CLT. We're working with other materials. We're doing it differently. That's phase two. And then the ultimate version would be some big city where there's demand and we have capacity. And we have folks who run the capacity that want to work with us to deliver our solutions, then, you know, we can deliver the full volumetric solution. That's the highest and best use, but it's not maybe the place to start. So I think
it's definitely a chicken or the egg. If it's hard to take all the silos on yourself, if what I'm saying is you're really working on that digital build and really focusing on that kit of parts to digital build and then finding the right partners to do the physical built environment, but really building from one source of truth and learning from what you're doing on your in Texas to then scale that, if I understand that right.
In my opinion, the capital costs for going to volumetric are significant.
100%.
And to build a custom home, those with off-the-shelf materials and labor that doesn't need to learn that much is cheaper and quicker. And it also gives us flexibility because we're this tiny firm with a global recognition, that brand recognition that has opportunities everywhere, but we need to come up with a way to monetize that and be involved in all those markets. So I think the site build is an easy place to start, although it's not really, I mean, it's retrograde, right? We're not advancing anything. We're just doing what's possible now at the lowest cost to help establish what does the market want locally, regionally, nationally, and go from there.
Yeah, I think you're kind of in a similar vein of a lot of people of the art of construction. Is you go back to the old how to eat an elephant one bite at a time, and it boils down to, like, you can't just go from this is how it's done today and now it's going to be 100% different of the volumetrics just going to all come from the factory. And I'm not saying, you know, back to Audrey who introduced us, there's a lot of people doing a great job with that and have been doing it for a long time, but it's sure not the norm.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's that figuring out what is the right norm and the paradigm shift of the norm of boiling down to how do we actually move this needle. And that's where you guys are taking your lessons learned. And we'll put links to the show notes. We've done a lot on your website of like educating digitally how you could do this differently of for whatever logistics of being off the grid, local municipalities, whatever that is, locally, but connecting it to the global platform that you've built.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, as we move on from this thing, on your LinkedIn profile, that's where I'm a big fan of. You do a lot of really cool stuff on there. You're talking about these power modules, and like, you know, you and I were talking before we turned on the mic of like what's the right thing to call it. Like, we're calling them personal accessory structures on the art of construction because we're doing a lot of the same stuff you guys are doing. Because you say ADU or shed or this, it's like finding the right thing to just say, you know what, it does. How do you, if you scale, you got to start and kind of crawl, walk, run. And I've kind of been seeing a lot of similar stuff. I think the journeys you and I have listening to people's stories about this kit of parts. But can you talk a little bit about these power modules and what that's all about?
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting idea. And And the cool thing about the project that we're doing now, again, it was an example of unmitigated scope creep. You know, you have an opportunity and you have to decide how does that look? What are we going to try to tackle? And so I think from a project management standpoint, it's not something to be proud of, but we decided to just scope out a little bit and put the infrastructure on the ground before we did the build so that we could tell the story for people. I don't think off-grid construction is a huge segment, but when people, particularly during and after COVID, I think people are aware of the idea that there is an advantage to having a natural setting for your residence or your business. And what I've seen so far is that we run generators or we wait until the utility has provided temporary power before we do construction. So there are two veins, there are two avenues, maybe verticals. One would be folks that are doing an offsite project and we're the design team, they're interested in that, then we would deliver the utility infrastructure prior to the build so that the build was done on renewables in a case where that made sense. You know, in some places it's not feasible. Solar is quite easy. It's very simple. It's a great way to work. I think it's quiet. It's reliable. It's beautiful. You can plug in at our place. You can plug in a welding rig and plasma cutter or whatever. You got a giant circuit that provides all the amps you need to do the work, which is unusual. I think most people haven't worked on a job site like that. I was enjoying doing a blower door test on solar PV. You know, this little things. It's kind of fun. Anyway, so one approach would be to deliver those modules. It's essentially power in a box. So we would have there's all different form factors depending on what's needed. Containerization is one sort of quick and easy way to do the work, and it's easy to handle and they're durable and all that. But we can customize it a little bit differently. So we envision a little bit higher design approach to the same thing, but essentially it would have batteries, inverters, charge controllers, and if we need to, connections for the arrays. And we have three containers that we use as the structures that we have a shop in one, we have a wash facility in another, and we have an office with the batteries and all the equipment.
And like a true test kitchen, yeah, where you're like this stuff
exactly.
To see.
And that was there before the Nexus Villa began.
Super cool.
So we were able to do metal fabrication on site with that rig, you know. And so what we want to do is be able to deliver those to our own projects, where it's a custom home or it's an off-grid build for somebody. And then if you're a builder or a developer and you want to sell a project like that, how do you do it in a way that's better, more interesting than everybody else? Building with renewables is a pretty interesting idea. So I think that's been proven quite appealing to folks. And then the other side of it is, if you're a construction company, if you're a GC, maybe you're a mid-size or smaller commercial GC and you want a little bit more control over how you start a project, maybe you've got a sales office that's open. And so we can deliver those structures that are both power and water delivery, but they're also commercial space for your sales team or pre-construction, whatever. And we can deliver to those to the site. You could own those and you can move those around. And they're obviously competing with the lease market product, but you wouldn't have the same restrictions as you would, like you could do advertising on that. It would be your structure, so you could use it for advertising. So there's a potential revenue stream there, where otherwise it's just a cost center. So we're trying to think through some of those things, and there is a demand for that. I ran into some folks at IBS in Orlando this last year and made a pitch to them. They had the marketing team there, they had the engineering team there. It was an interesting table because it was all of them and just me. And so I was saying, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And we had a really cool conversation. So now I'm talking to one of their customers, and they have a need for it. So I think to be able to deliver renewable construction-based solutions, it's not going to solve everything. But in a lot of cases, if you're doing work earlier than you would otherwise, that's helpful. And if you have the ability to control it as an owner, that's an opportunity. So those are the two avenues that we're looking for that. But essentially, it's just a scaled structure that we've designed. You know, it might be a container, so it's not heavily designed. It might be very much like a container, but we can work with those form factors and those opportunities to get something.
Well, good on you, because money talks and bullshit walks, and you have to figure out how to put the stuff together, right? To where you can go into those developers, marketers, all the different platforms to say, hey, what about looking at it this way instead of just the local municipalities or this and that? So good on you for that. I'm excited for these questions that we always ask as we close this thing out. As the guy that's been going all over, and if you've been learning and taking in so much while you're living in a forward-thinking structure with a very global platform forward-thinking to niche into local markets. Andrew, what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
I think I don't feel like I can see very far, but I see I see a lot of change. I think that the incumbents that we have today are trying to deliver something today, and we need that. We really need that. But I don't think what we're doing today is what we'll be doing in the future. So personally, I feel like there'll be a lot more change. I think materials will nature be creating materials for us in the distant future? Possibly. I think that just the advent of hemp as a building material, things like that will be where we see a lot of change. I would like to see that change. I think that we don't think a lot about materials. We use what's available. We use what's in the cupboard, in the pantry. That's great. But how do we see down the road? I would guess that materials is probably the biggest thing, and how we work together, and how do we democratize development? Because we have this bottleneck where the people that have been doing it for a long time want to continue to do it for a long time the way they're already doing it, and in the future, and we would like new fresh blood, right? Fresh talent. And let's open up the industry to people that haven't been able to participate before, because we need a lot more delivery talent than we have right now.
100%. And it's scary, right? The current business models, if you say it's going to change how it's all going to work, that's scary change with what's happening right now for that paradigm shift. But, you know, for every cause, there's a reaction. But we have to create that reaction. And that's what it takes, somebody to step up like you've done to say, I'm going to order one of these things. And then I'm going to live in one of these things. And then I'm going to go to work and like learn about this crazy world of how this is all happening. And as you've done this, as we niche in, and I'm hearing from you guys of coming into that, Andrew, what is that one thing you want to leave our contractors and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it and grow their business?
That's a hard question. I think there are so many things to touch on. For me, I think the community side of it is where we really need to learn from each other. We need to spend more time with each other. The professionals who are executing everything at the highest possible level right now, we need to learn from them, but they also, I think, need, everybody's so maxed out. We need that exposure to other ideas. We need the, now that we're visiting each other face to face and in person, I think we need that social side to spread the ideas, to catalyze the working together, the collaboration and the creativity. So I think it's happening, but for me, the social side of it is probably the biggest thing, where we know a lot, we know what's available, but how do we work together individually and as a group in the areas where we have to achieve a lot more?
100% agree. And thank you so much for coming all the way up here, where you drove all the way from Texas last night to where, you know, what a student to the game. And you jumped in, is where I said, here's your homework, and you put it all together. And that's not easy, right? Because we're under all these deadlines and like what we've committed to step up and take a little time to work on your business. And when I say working on your business, I would relate to that as the community that we call the Art of Construction Tribe. And we commend you for being one of those master facilitators, that this is not about Andrew or Devin. It's not about Art of Construction or G-Pod America, G-Pod Global. It's about this community where you're going to continue on your journey to go up to Canada and meet with 475 or the different, all these different tentacles of the Art of Construction tribe in this web that all comes together to say, it's too big to do it yourself. So how do we do it together to build better buildings? So that's why I was so excited to have you, because you've been such a passionate lifelong learner, and we're honored to have you as one of our master facilitators, being a leader of these stories, because the only constant is change, but boy, construction can be slow sometimes to change, right?
Boy. Yeah. And Devin, thank you. You and Scott and Matt and the other folks here do amazing work. I was thrilled to be part of the community 2019 and, you know, ongoing. I think it's beautiful to have the community. We're in a time of change, and it's a fair struggle, honestly. You know, there's so much uncertainty. How do we plan ahead? How do we invest? So we need the social side, I think, to shore up our confidence and feel like we're not alone, and good ideas shared and support, just support.
Yeah, and we're doing a lot for that. Stay tuned. Well, this is that voice that we're all using to come together, and we're creating this Master Facilitators group to create some certainty and have good conversations around, should you build out of a shipping container? That, is it a shipping container? What is it not a shipping container? But it all boils down to figuring out, how do the logistics work to put this kit of parts together? And we have to work together, but we have to do it. We have to learn by doing. We got to keep this thing going and moving. So I'm excited for the future of what you got going, and we're honored to have you a part of the team.
Thanks, Devin. It's amazing to be here. It's great to see you.
All right. Crush it out there, tribe.